right, welcome back to another episode of Unschooled Real here at GotchaMovies.com. I'm your host, Ryan Oliver.
And I'm Jenny Nolf.
Also host.
Yes. Also a host.
We're back here for a second episode, and we're going to dive into a big movie that came out this week. But before we do, we'll just get started in what have you been watching this week?
Well, I haven't watched much. I watched Pitch Perfect 2, and then I mentioned this on the Gotcha Movies podcast. I also went to a Master Pancake for the Goonies, which Master Pancake, for those who aren't from Austin or Texas or go to an Alamo, is kind of like, that one, I had it in my
Mystery
head.
Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yeah, like Mystery Science Theater 3000, and then they did the Goonies, and oh, it was so funny. I probably shouldn't have gone out, though, because I was feeling kind of under the weather, but I was like, no, I missed it last weekend. It's my last chance. I gotta go.
Nice. I did not see the Goonies Master Pancake, unfortunately, but I also saw Pitch Perfect 2, and it was fine. Like, it was, I think I laughed more than the first one, but I also, seeing it in a packed theater, elevated the laughs more than watching the first one at home.
I mean, I think I liked the first one more, because I felt like there was more of a story going on in that one, but I was actually really disappointed with Pitch Perfect 2. I felt like it didn't really, maybe it was the person I saw it with. I saw it with my brother, who didn't even like the first one, but he chose to go see the second one. I don't know why.
Yeah. But,
I was like, Mad Max or Pitch Perfect 2? And he's like, let's go see Pitch Perfect 2, even though he didn't like the first one. But I just didn't laugh really much. I don't know. Didn't like it as much.
Yeah, I laughed a lot, but at the same time, like, it's not a movie I necessarily loved, and I didn't love the first one either. I thought it was too long, I think. I think both are too long, but there are definitely a couple cameos that had me cracking up, and one scene-stealing performance in particular. So, I laughed a lot, but, this movie made $70 million this weekend, which is just unfathomably insane to me, but who am I to judge, so...
I think that's insane, too, though. Like, I'm trying to think. I'm sure Mean Girls never made that much. And just as far as girl comedies, I'm going to go look up how much Bridesmaids made just now. But
Bridesmaids made, like, $150 million, I think.
But that's overall.
Yeah, overall. It opened probably, like, $40 million, and had just really good word of mouth. I think Pitch Perfect 2 will probably end up making the same as Bridesmaids in the long run, but because I think all the fans went to see it this weekend, and it's going to take a huge drop. That's just my guess.
But it's just insane that this all-girl comedy like could make that much money in one weekend to me. I think that's
definitely
crazy.
I think it's cool, but also I thought it was insane. Because I know it and Mad Max were like supposed to make $40 to $50 million, and it just really like went way ahead of the pack.
Oh, I know. I went Friday night to Pitch Perfect 2, and me and my brother got like 30 minutes to a 9 o'clock show, which usually you're okay in Austin, especially if it's not in Alamo. But it was sold out, and the two ones before that were sold out, and the 10-10 almost got sold out, which is insane.
So you were stuck going to a 10-10 show.
Yeah, we waited a little bit. I mean, it was from 9:30 to 10:10, so it wasn't like a big deal.
Just eat some popcorn, you'll be okay.
We actually had eaten pizza before because it's National Pizza Party Day.
Oh, hell yeah. Can't argue with that logic.
No.
So I guess in addition to Pitch Perfect 2, theatrically, I saw Avengers Age of Ultron, finally, which also perfectly fine. Not really much to say about it. I saw the Pacific Science Center in Seattle, which is a real, true IMAX theater, so that was an experience and fun. But the more I get away from the movie, the more I'm like, wow, there's actually a lot of issues in this movie. I was actually disappointed reading an article that Kevin Feige, the brain trust of Marvel, basically said, oh, the Marvel universe is never going to go dark. Then why do you keep pretending to go dark? That's just bothersome to me.
Oh, I didn't even read that. I mean, I know a lot of people love the Avengers, so I'm trying to tiptoe around it, but I didn't like it that much. And I think I had a really good time when I watched it, but outside that, I feel like there's a lot better AI films this year, with Ex Machina coming out a couple weekends before. And I mean, I haven't seen Chappie, but I'm just gonna, well, maybe that one's really bad compared to Avengers, but
Chappie deals with that subject matter more like intelligently, despite its occasional stupidity. But like, because the Avengers is like, it's not really hinging on its AI, it's hinging on the characters and the snappy dialogue and the action. But it's like, I don't know, the action is just, you know, boring and PG-13-ified as ever, and it wasn't overall that interesting. I liked Hawkeye's story, I thought was really solid, but overall, I just was like, yeah, it was fine. I'll never watch it again. So that's where I stand on it.
Yeah, which is unlike the first Avengers for me, which I would totally, I did watch that again. I think I watched it twice in theaters. And
I did as well.
Yeah, I just don't feel the urge to return, especially since they, I mean, I think you can all say it by now, they killed off Quicksilver. And I'm like, well, what was the point of bringing him on?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then at home, I'll just, there's no need to dive into these because they've all older films, but having to work this weekend and doing a lot of stuff that just, I had movies playing on my iPad in the background. So really, I just ran through this, watched Inherent Vice, Lost River, Before Sunset, Godzilla, He Got Game, 8 Mile, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, and the Lego Movie.
Jesus.
I mean, I didn't watch them all again. They were just running in the background, but
yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Between my Vudu account and HBO Now, it's there's a lot of stuff at your disposal.
Yeah. I mean, I watched not a lot this weekend compared to you. I caught up on Orphan Black at home. I mean, that was awesome. But yeah. Aside from that, I watched Game of Thrones last night. I'm more of a TV junkie at home.
Which I still have not watched last night's episode, so shut up.
I don't say anything. I'm really good with not spoiling people, I feel.
No, you're definitely good. So yeah, that's what we've been watching. Should we move on?
Yes.
All right, so we're going to move on to our main review of Mad Max Fury Road.
In this wasteland, I am the one who runs from both the living and the dead. Reduced to a single instinct. Survive.
It is by my hand! You will rise! From the ashes of this world! Taking them. I want them back. They're my property.
Oh, what a day. What a lovely day.
Want to get through this?
Go.
As the world fell, each of us in our own way was broken. It was hard to know who was more crazy. Me, or everyone else.
So this is, woohoo, exactly. So this is the fourth installment of the Mad Max series. It is helmed by franchise director George Miller. He's helmed the original three films, and he came back for this fourth one. You just recently got on board the Mad Max series, in terms of, like, you just caught up with the original films, correct?
Unfortunately, not all of them. I meant to do that this weekend, but then Orphan Black got in the way. I did watch The Road Warrior before I went to go see Fury Road, and I have seen a chunk of the original Mad Max on TV. So I'm not, like, totally spacey about the early films, but I haven't seen Thunderdome.
Right, okay. Which I like Thunderdome. A lot of people aren't a huge fan of that movie, but I think there's some really excellent excellent stuff in it, especially the actual aforementioned Thunderdome fight scene. I think it's great. And Tina Turner is a fun villain in the movie as well. But yeah, The Road Warrior was if you had to pick one, that was a good choice, I think. The original Mad Max is, I think, a really solid movie, and it lays the groundwork really well to lead into The Road Warrior. I think it makes The Road Warrior that much better, the fact that the movie exists. But it's not my favorite of them, the original. But The Road Warrior, George Miller has said, is more closer to what Fury Road is, which is takes place... Well, not takes place. It arrives 30 years after Thunderdome. It's kind of ambiguous where this movie even takes place in the timeline and whether or not it's a reboot or not, which is one aspect I really liked about the movie. But overall, what did you think about this new Mad Max installment?
Oh, my God. Like, I watched The Road Warrior, and I loved it. But then I was not ready for how much I would love Fury Road. Also really interesting that you mentioned that... Also really interesting that you mentioned that Fury Road is more like The Road Warrior, and how you also say that it's like a revisit almost, because George Miller in an interview said that Fury Road's not necessarily a remake, it's not necessarily a prequel, and it's not necessarily a sequel either.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what one thing I really appreciated about the movie is, like, there are, like for example, and I say this in my review, and it's not even really a spoiler, the villain in this movie, Immortan Joe, is played by this actor, Hugh Keyes Byrne, who played the Toe Cutter, who was the main villain in the original Mad Max. So he's back in this movie, and they don't really say whether or not it's the same character, though I can guess that it isn't, because that character meets a pretty bad end at Mad Max. So I'm going to guess that it is not. But I like that idea that the same actor's in it. There's definitely a lot of callbacks in this movie, but they're not like the winking at the audience type callbacks. Like, they're subtle. They're callbacks that I wouldn't have noticed had I not rewatched the entire series the day before going to see Fury Road.
There's a really fun callback that I noticed online today, because having seen The Road Warrior, I didn't realize that they have the skull of the helicopter guy on one of the cars.
I didn't know that.
Someone has there's a screen cap of it online, too. It's like, there it is. And I'm like, he's dead.
Oh, man, I'm seeing Fury Road again tonight. I'm gonna have to look for that. But I'm thinking more of terms of Nux and the who's played in this movie by Nicholas Hoult, and the character, and it's one of the five wife characters, the one that he's kind of taken with. They have this little Jack in the Box sort of like nursery rhyme thing, which Max finds at the beginning of The Road Warrior. And then there's a scene where his shotgun kind of malfunctions, which also happens in The Road Warrior. So there was a little callbacks there. But yeah, I guess I haven't said I fucking loved this movie. Like, there is no doubt about that. It's my favorite movie I've seen this year easily. I'm a huge fan of the Mad Max series. Listeners, if you can't already tell, I know Jenny knows that I am, but if you didn't know, I'm a huge Mad Max fan. I've been waiting for this movie for years before these amazing trailers that Warner Brothers put out came on and people went nuts for them. Like, I was excited that they were making another Mad Max. And it was everything I ever wanted in a Mad Max movie. It's like 2 hours of pretty much nonstop action, but like, and I love that, like, other than an opening voiceover narration, which is a tired sort of sci-fi trope, but, and then again, The Road Warrior starts with opening voiceover narration too, so it's like, I can forgive that. But I feel like all the exposition is given through like character actions and through like eyes and facial expressions, and so it's like it's cut of just all this awful hackney exposition that you see in movies like The Avengers, and it's just gives you everything that you want from a blockbuster movie. So I loved this movie just flat out.
On the opposite end, I'm not as Mad Max crazy as you are, but I love this movie too. It's easily my favorite thing I've seen this year so far. It might easily even be in my top 10 at the end of the year for how high I rated it. It's amazing. This movie is everything I wanted and more from a blockbuster that I never really knew I wanted from a blockbuster. That has like super feminist undertones, and there's a leading female, even though it's about like crashing cars, essentially.
Right, which it's interesting, and I want to say, I think it was Drew McWeeny's review over at HitFix talked about how, and this movie really stays in line with it, that almost every Mad Max movie, except for the first one, isn't really his story. Like, we're following another group of people, and he's just kind of this entity that arrives with these other people. So the lead of this movie is Charlize Theron, who plays Imperator Furiosa, who is... instead of, you think at the beginning of the movie she's taking these oil rigs from one place to another, but she's actually smuggling these handmaidens for the villain in Morton Joe out of their like horrible captivity. And so, yeah, the movie's got a lot of like really feminist undertones that I think is incredible and just not seen in a blockbuster movie, sadly. And just the fact that this movie is a $150 million hard R crazy gonzo vision of a movie is like, the fact that it got made is just like, it puts a grin on my face.
Yeah, that's what you get for making two Happy Feets. They're like, you could do whatever you want on Mad Max 4.
Oh, man. Talk about a weird like career trajectory for George Miller. Like, these, he did the four Mad Max movies. He did The Witches of Eastwick, which I think is a solid movie. He did Lorenzo's Oil, which I've never seen and I've heard is a really strong movie. He produced and wrote Babe.
And then he did the second one.
Yeah, he directed Babe, Pig in the City, and then did two Happy Feet movies. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, that's the weirdest, strangest career I've ever heard of.
Basically. It's really funny. I just think it's hilarious that he made Babe 2, Pig in the City, but and then he was like, Mad Max time. But
yes.
But no, it's totally what you're able to do once you make successful movies for a studio. A studio will be like, you can do whatever you want. But I listened to a podcast called Voice Filmcast, and they mentioned today something that I didn't even think about, is that Warner Brothers usually throws a lot of money at these like very intellectual, very different, very adult blockbusters. Like they have Christopher Nolan, they had Edge of Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Even Godzilla was a really interesting take on that story and on the like sort of themes that it was dealing with. Like, whether or not you thought it was a successful movie, it was definitely more like interesting and kind of stuck out among like these kind of blockbusters that are the same.
Yeah, and I think that's really fascinating. And I know that people are kind of bummed that it only made $44 million, but for a hard R movie that made $44 million in its first weekend and then went on to make $109 million worldwide, it's pretty much of a feat, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And it's like, you know what? I mean, it made more than, like, I think the last time, like, Fanboys, which I hate to use that term because I feel it's so, like, derogatory, but, like, we'll just say for the sake of argument that what the press is saying, like, the last movie I think that, like, really big, like, fanboy crowd and were disappointed that it didn't open as high was Pacific Rim. Which I think this movie is 100 times better than Pacific Rim, but that movie, like, you know, ultimately was a financial success, or maybe broke even, I'm not totally sure, but ultimately I don't think it matters. Like, I'm a bummed. Would I love to see this movie be number one in the box office? Sure. But at the same time, it's like, you know what, that's still a really high number. It still knocked the Avengers off from its throne, so I can accept that. Plus, it's already, I mean, you have to account for inflation, but just base dollars, it's already made more than the other Mad Max movies. It's already the highest grossing.
Yeah, which does say something. And I know that people are worried that, like, oh, if it doesn't make its money back, what does this say for the franchise? But I'm like, you know what? If a franchise ended here and I just had this movie, I'm really, really satisfied right now.
Yeah, I would really just like to have this movie. Though I haven't got a chance to read the article yet, but I saw a tweet headline from Ropa Silicone that that George Miller thanks his fans and says that more Mad Max is coming. So I haven't got to read that article. I don't know what that means. But yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
I do know they're doing a comic that's kind of on Fury Road. I also know that Tom Hardy has signed on for 3 movies. And mm-hmm. I was talking to someone today. They were like, I'd like to see a Furiosa movie. And I was like, but this was her movie. And her story is kind of done.
Yeah, her story has a great arc. Like, she gets the redemption in the movie. I mean, that's her story. And, like, Max is always looking for redemption for the things in his life. But, yeah, like that review I name-checked, it's like he's just an entity that shows up. And so Tom Hardy taking this role from Mel Gibson, which is an iconic role. Like, I really like Mel Gibson's performance in those movies. But I mentioned in my review that Tom Hardy kind of does something with the role that Mel Gibson never did, which is give it a sense of humor. Like, there is a lot of moments that I felt were, like, funny and not out of place. And not goofy, but just, like, I feel like they were natural to the situation. And Mel Gibson was basically playing the man with no name in a post-apocalyptic setting. Whereas, like, Tom Hardy is, like, he's stoic, he's stern, but he also gives it a welcomed sense of humor.
And I definitely think that's true. There's a part where he has, like, the grill on his face, and he's trying to, like, unhinge it. I thought that, like, the whole, like, play with, like, him and Charlize and the wives was really funny in that scene, and just, like, how he reacts. But it's really interesting how, like, this in Road Warrior, Max's character in general is more like a third-person narrator, I would say. And you're, like, yeah, there with him, and you're just seeing through his eyes a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, we should mention that this movie, you know, despite using a lot of CGI and color correction, is, like, mostly practical. Almost all the stunts were done in camera. They crashed these cars. People dangled from poles, which I thought was amazing. Like, I don't even know how they pulled that off or how they did not get hurt doing some of the stunts that they did in this movie. But the action, unlike a lot of movies, like, I'm going to name check the Avengers, but sorry, they're the big game of town, so I got to knock them down a peg or two. You know, the violence and action of those movies just feel so inconsequential. And Mad Max, like, I felt the intensity. I felt that anybody could die at any moment. I felt that, like, anybody could get hurt at any moment. And I feel like that sense of stake is largely missing in summer blockbusters. And it was nice to see that get re-energized and re-entered into these type of movies.
I think that's also because you get to, you have, like, these villains, which are these, like, albino-y, like, basically cancer-ridden characters that they have, like, tumors growing on them and all that jazz. And they need blood from other humans to survive. But you get to meet one of these people. And this is different between, like, this movie and, say, Avengers, where, like, you have these, like, Hydra. And you never get to meet Hydra. You never get to meet a single person in Hydra unless they're, like, the big top guy. And in Mad Max, you get to meet this small guy who literally, he's like a kamikaze.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crazy, you know, warrior for this Immortan Joe guy. And you get to feel for all these guys. So when one of them dies, you're like, oh, wait, but he doesn't really know better, does he? He's just, like, super hopped on drugs, which I think one of them even mentions that they're just, like, they're just boys on drugs.
Basically, and they're like Vikings almost in the way that they I mean, they only know fighting. That's all they know. And they reference Valhalla a lot in this movie. Like, I'm going to die and go to Valhalla. Like, I think one of the lines is, I live, I die, I live again. And so that's, yeah, that's exactly, that's all they know. And we get to really know one of the characters has a profound change, which I did not expect at all. Like, I expected him to be, like, one of the straightforward villains in the movie. And, he goes over a profound change that is, like, really fascinating.
Yeah, which is what, and I'm going to go back to Avengers now. It's like, it's what, why the first Avengers is so much better than the second Avengers is because you have a villain that has a little bit more sides, and Nicholas Holt's Nux has more sides to him than mm-hmm. meets the eye. And I think that's, like, that makes these characters more relatable. And obviously Immortan Joe is pretty bad. He's a pretty bad guy. You're not supposed to ever feel sorry for him. I mean, he's basically a rapist.
Yeah, absolutely. He does terrible, horrible things to his men, to his handmaidens, to everybody. Everybody involved. He is a totalitarian dictator. That's exactly what he is.
And he's like I love how they introduce him. And he's like the most disgusting guy I could have ever imagined. He's even worse than the guy that has, like, these, like, bubble feet later on in the movie.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And it's like in the trailers, like, you don't think. Like, you know, they have this steampunk aesthetic to him, but, like, you know that, like, he, yeah, when he's introduced, he's, like, way more gross than what I saw in the trailer.
Yeah. Him. He's, like, he has, like, these, like, oh, like, huge zits all over his, like, white body, which he clearly is, like, working his hardest to make him look, like, super albino. And then, like, one of the first scenes he's in, he's, like, drinking milk from these, like, really obese women that he keeps obese so they can, like, continuously produce that much milk. It's so disgusting. And it's like, this guy is gross. This guy is awful. And then he, like, is in charge of this water supply that you're like, and he's like, don't get addicted to water. And I'm like, you asshole. People need to live off of water.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was really interesting. And that, you know, the fact that, like, water and all these resources are now the currency, which has always been, like, part of Mad Max. Like, the Road Warrior is gasoline, that's currency. And I think George Miller said himself, like, he's like, yeah, that was the case in that movie. And he's like, I just had an idea one day. He's like, what if it's humans? Like, what if it's humans that's the currency in the movie? And so that's kind of the idea that stemmed from Fury Road, or for Fury Road anyway.
Yeah, I do think that it's very smart to have water as a currency in the future. It makes so much more sense than fuel or or food or anything else to me, because water is something that's so necessary.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, and I love how each movie, like, even though, again, this movie is ambiguous in where it fits into the other movies, and I know you haven't seen Thunderdome yet, but every movie builds upon itself, but not in a way that it goes, like, dumber necessarily, but the world expands. Like, the first movie, it's not even, like, wasteland, like, as you know from the bits that you've seen of the movie. Like, there's, the world is starting to crumble into chaos, but there's still some semblance of hope and, like, holding on to that hope, since Max is a cop in that movie in the Australian landscape. And then the Road Warrior becomes full-on chaos in this sort of, like, small secular group of people. And then Thunderdome, you find this whole city and this other civilization, and then Fury Road even expands on that even greater.
Yeah, from watching Road Warrior to Fury Road, the just massive expansion of, like, this idea, like, the cars are more spiky, and, like, these people have clearly evolved into, like, creepier people. Like, you had in Road Warrior, you had the guys who are on the front of the cars, and you don't really know what, they're prisoners, that's all you know. And then in Fury Road, the guys that are in front of cars that Mad Max gets, like, put in their shoes, they're actually, like, these, like, blood banks.
Yeah.
And it's like, yep. Oh, gross.
Which, yeah, I thought that was really interesting. And, like, if I have any complaint about the movie, the one, like, illogical thing, but also, like, I went with it. Like, the movie is just that strong that I went with it. But yeah, there's a whole magic blood sort of storyline that's a trope in movies that I don't like, but I was able to forgive in this movie. Like, it's the thing that dropped the ball at the end of Star Trek Into Darkness for me. I'll say that.
Well, it's kind of like, does everyone have type O blood?
That's what I was wondering. Like, I was like, there's no, I don't know. That was the one aspect that, like, if anything, like, you know, because no movie's perfect, and it doesn't have to be. The experience is incredible and just such a, you know, grand theatrical experience. But at the same time, like, yeah, that, if there's one issue I have with this movie, it's magic blood.
Yeah, the, like, clearly, apparently, all, like, cancer victims, it doesn't matter what kind of blood you have, type A, type B, type O, whatever type whatever. O would work.
We'll
but
just give me the blood. We'll take it. We'll use it.
I think another one of my nitpicks, though, and this isn't even, like, really a nitpick, would be the ADR was a little bit off sometimes for me, but I understand why, is because, like, you can't have recordings going on during all of these stunts, all these crazy things going on, so you have to have ADR in this movie, but sometimes it's all off.
Yeah, I could see that. Like I think Tom Hardy's voice, like, I noticed the most with his dialogue, what few dialogue he has in the movie. But yeah, I noticed that a little bit, but it didn't bother me too much. It's just the power of cinema, really. It's the fact that this movie is, like, that powerful that you really, any minor complaint like you or I have is, like, almost inconsequential.
I know, because it just has this kinetic energy that flows through it until the very end, where you're just like, oh, this is so good, and it has such a good story without so much exposition, and it's almost like, it's like the action version of WALL-E.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, exactly. And Mad Max, the series, was an inspiration for pretty much every post-apocalyptic movie that has come since. Like, I don't think it's the first movie to deal with the post-apocalypse. In fact, it isn't at all. But it's, like, the one that I think that is most ingrained in pop culture. And so it's the one that people kind of point to as being, like, I think the beginning of the, like, resurgence of this genre. And so it's, I don't know, it's nice to see it back on the screen.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you there. I would say, like, sometimes you say things like, without this movie, The Hunger Games wouldn't exist. I'm like, oh, but it was a book. But I will agree with you that I feel
but
like...
But these movies still came before those books.
Yeah, but who's to say that the authors watched those movies? I mean, these are girl authors. I hate saying this, but, like, Mad Max isn't necessarily the girliest of movies.
No, it's very masculine. Yeah, it's very... They're very masculine. They're very action-heavy. But at the same time, if there was something that maybe inspired Hunger Games, again, I think The Running Man is what, like, the closest to being The Hunger Games before The Hunger Games came out, which is also a very, like, masculine film. But I think any of these ideas that have come since that may have converged to The Hunger Games still started with Mad Max.
Yeah, maybe it's like a trickle down effect or something.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
All right. Fair enough.
So, no, I really do think that those movies would not, maybe not exist, but, like, what they are is because of the series. And it was hard. Like, it was, despite how amazing the marketing and the trailers were for this movie, I was concerned that maybe it wasn't going to live up to the others, or maybe that the series was too old and it wasn't going to work. And I was quickly proven wrong. And I think that, I think this movie is enjoyable even if you haven't seen the other movies. And I think that's impressive too.
Oh yeah. I definitely know that one of our writers, my writers, Lila, she texted me after having not seen any of the Mad Max movies before, was like, I loved it. You don't really need it. Cause you don't, because this isn't like we've mentioned before, it's a revisit, not necessarily a sequel.
Yeah, absolutely. She actually asked me the same question too. She's like, okay, I know you're a huge Mad Max nut. Do I need to see these movies? And I was like, you should, just because I think they're great, but like, you don't have to. You don't have to. It's rewarding for those who have seen it, but also, like, and that's why I forgive the voiceover at the beginning, because I think it's a good reappropriation. Like, even The Road Warrior, which starts with voiceover exposition, basically a recap of the first movie. Like, the first 5 minutes is just a recap of the first movie, because the first movie was this, like, really culty movie, and it came from Australia, and I don't think it played in a lot of American theaters. And so, like, Warner Brothers knew something was good with this director, with George Miller, and so they gave him the money to do the sequel. But in the States, that's why it's called The Road Warrior, because some people weren't aware that there was a Mad Max 1. And so that's the reason why it's called The Road Warrior, even though the title card in the movie is Mad Max 2.
Yeah, that is really interesting to think about, because, like, I guess back then you wouldn't have VOD or anything like that. They didn't even have VHS at that point yet.
No, they didn't have VHS. So that movie was definitely a cult thing, and maybe it played like in midnight, like boutique theaters, but I don't think it was never a mainstream release in the States, like The Road Warrior and then Beyond Thunderdome were.
Yeah, but there's also something really special you can say about a series where you can watch it out of order. And I think that Mad Max is one of those ones where you could definitely, like, I did watch it out of order, and it makes it so much more interesting that you can do that and then go back and, like, revisit things and be like, oh, so this is what that means, or something like that. Or like, oh, now I really want to see Thunderdome and watch that and see how crazy good or crazy bad it is.
Yeah, which I think is crazy good, but some people would disagree, but whatever. It's great that every movie in the series is self-contained, but there's also rewards if you have seen all of them. So you don't have to see any one in any particular order, which I think is great. I think that's an impressive feat to pull off. It's not easy to do that. Like these Marvel movies where it's like, it really doesn't matter. But like, there are definitely convoluted storylines that if you didn't see Thor the Dark World, like you'd be lost of something in the Avengers. And it's like, that's not fair. Why do I have to watch that to watch this? Like Mad Max, you don't have to do that. And that's great.
Yeah, for Mad Max, I don't have to watch Ant-Man to understand what happens in Civil War.
Yeah, thank God. Which, I mean, I can't comment on Ant-Man because we haven't seen it. It could be amazing.
No, I know, but I like poking fun at the fact that that's probably the first Marvel movie I have zero interest in watching in a theater.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. But I think, like, it's just, I think this, like, looking at the summer calendar, and again, like, I haven't seen any other blockbuster other than the three that have come out so far, like, this summer. I just don't see how anything's going to top this in terms of, like, I mean, not just, like, nothing's going to top it in action, because if it did, I don't think anybody would be able to handle it. Like, it would just be too much. But I think, but I don't think anything's going to top it in terms of, like, quality, like, especially sequels that are, you know, these old franchises that are getting dusted off, like Jurassic Park. Like, I don't think anything is going to be able to match this, or Terminator, God forbid, which I'm sure we'll review later on in an episode. But,
oh, good.
Just so I can make you watch Terminator 1 and 2. God damn it. but,
oh, good.
but I don't see how anything is going to do it. And I appreciate the Gonzo vision. And even, like, you know, we haven't seen Tomorrowland yet. The reviews have been kind of mixed so far, but, like, I appreciate that movie, even before going into it, I appreciate that it's like an untamed vision. So, I don't know, maybe I think we need more movies, that are less tampered with. That's my vote.
Yeah, I definitely, back to the Tomorrowland thing, oh my god, reviews are so sporadic. Like, I've seen 9 out of 10s, and then I've seen, like, 0 out of 5s. So yeah. I'm like, oh, I don't even know what to think. I want to see it, but I probably won't see it until June now, because I switched out the screening with someone else, because I'm under the weather. Sad Jenny. Maybe it'll definitely be on the plane.
Maybe, doubtful, but maybe, hopefully. Well, it isn't. You're on an international flight, so maybe.
Disney has a deal with international flights, so maybe.
Yeah, you might get lucky. Mine are all domestic, so it's like, oh, yeah, do I want to watch This Is Where I Leave You? No, not really. anyway, I think I even appreciate that movie before it even comes out, because it's provoking conversation. And it's like the conversation around the Avengers, like, sorry, but it's just, you know, it's the one thing that has to be said. And even Furious 7, to a degree, it's just like, yeah, it was fun, and that was it. Like, that was the end of the conversation. Like, it was fun, it's flawed, and then we move on to the next thing. And so I hope that the conversation around this movie actually sticks around for a while.
I think it will. My only real worry is that the conversation will start to sour at one point where everyone's like, everyone likes this movie. Hold on, I don't.
That's true. I mean, we haven't mentioned, like, it's got a 98% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, super high. It's got a 8.2 on IMDb.
8.8,
that's right. It is number 23 in the top 250 currently. Granted, that will probably change around a little bit, but, like, I don't see it leaving the top 250 in any way. So, that will definitely be the contrarian pushback to the movie. I predict that will happen. But I can say I'm not going to be one of them.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to be one of them either. This movie is great, no matter how you spin it. And back to Rotten Tomatoes, actually, I know this is kind of a little off topic, but Tomorrowland is at 76, so we can all breathe fine.
Yeah, and again, like, who cares, really, what the Rotten Tomatoes score is? As long as you like the movie, or don't, like, whatever. It just, you know, you can't judge what other people are saying about it.
Exactly. But so, Mad Max is legitimately good.
Yeah. It's one of those movies where people be like, you know, it's reaching such a critical mass that others are like, is it really that good? And then go see it like, no, it wasn't really that good. It's like, but it is that good.
It's like, did you watch the same movie as me?
I don't know if you did. That's what I'm wondering. Like, it's one of those movies that it's like, I understand if somebody didn't like it, but again, I haven't heard many arguments like against it. So I'm just like, it feels like anybody who did is like, we did not watch the same movie. We just didn't. I don't think.
I mean, I had someone today come up and tell me, like, I liked it, but no one talked, and I was just like, so did you? You just said you liked it.
But it's like, when you see Furious 7 or the Avengers, like, do you really care about what people are saying, or are you just there to watch some cars blow up? You know, like, I'm not advocating that experience, because then you're just watching a Michael Bay movie, but, like, you know, but the dialogue in, like, his movies, or like Furious 7, despite as much as I, you know, kind of enjoy that franchise, like, it doesn't matter. Like, it's ultimately doesn't, you know, because it doesn't really hold any dramatic weight. And it's like, why, if you can hold even more dramatic weight with saying less, then do it. And Mad Max does that.
Yeah, and like I said, the brilliant thing about Mad Max is it doesn't really even need dialogue to propel its story.
No, because you have these huge, gigantic trucks moving at 70 miles an hour for 2 hours straight.
In orange and blue lighting, nonetheless.
Yeah, absolutely. Really orange and really blue. Again, I think that's where the CG comes in. Like, not CG, but, like, color correction. Like, this movie definitely was color corrected.
Oh, yeah.
Up to Yin Yang. Like, just watching The Road Warrior and this back to back. But also, again, at least they shot on location. They didn't green screen it. They didn't Avengers it, or George Lucas it, or Star Wars it, whatever. Like, it's it feels real. It feels real to me. So that's, I loved it.
I did read somewhere, though, that someone said that the guitarist in Mad Max, you know, the really cool guitar guy that's great, and he's, like, easily the best character ever, like, imagined. Someone was like, compared to Jar Jar Binks, and I was like, no, wrong.
He's already better than Jar Jar Binks because he doesn't speak. Like, that's kind of obvious. And the fact that, yeah, like, he has this awesome guitar and bass, and yeah, I don't know. I thought that was goofy, but I loved it. I loved every second of it. He's like their version of Animal from the Muppets. because like he's in chains and they have him like covered, like, you know, they don't let him out, and he just like, he's like, oh, guitar, and so he doesn't say that, but that's basically what he is implying. So that's
that's his real backstory. That's like, they came out with his backstory, but no, that's his real one. He's really Animal from the Muppets.
Kind of. I mean, he kind of is. There's similarities, but in this weird, like, you know, like the person in a war who would play like the flute or the bagpipes, they just have this hybrid bass and guitar that he just plays metal on. It's
because
great.
Why the hell not?
Because why not? Who gives a shit? It's awesome. You know, it commits to this weird vision, which I think is what I like about it. It's a movie that I feel like is like dire, but also fun, which is weird. Like I didn't feel that with, you know, I didn't feel that with the Avengers, and I didn't feel that with, you know, a movie like Man of Steel or something like that. Like, I didn't feel like, it's just dire, but boring. And this is like dire, but also entertaining. So to achieve that balance, like, other than like Christopher Nolan, like, there's not many people who can achieve that balance. So, yeah, I praise George Miller for doing that.
You know, what makes this so interesting is because the world's already in peril. It's already dead at this point. So, it's more interesting to see this little battle versus we have to save the world. It's like, no, we have to save five women from patriarchy. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, it feels so like minuscule in, you know, in its story in that way, because you get to learn about those five characters, and you learn about the horrible things they've gone through, and you care about their plight, whereas like a whole city gets lifted in Age of Ultron, but it's like, I don't care. I don't know anybody. Like, I'm glad they took the time to save some people, unlike, you know, Man of Steel, but like, I still wasn't like, I don't care. Like, even the character that dies, I'm like, whatever. Like, I didn't feel the whatever with Mad Max. I was completely invested in it. And like, my friend who went to the screening with me, who had not seen any other Mad Max movies, and he enjoyed it. Like, even beforehand, I was kind of like leaning in my seat, and I had a soda. I was just like drinking it. He's like, I've never seen you so excited to see a movie. He's like, you look intense. And I was like, do you want to check my pulse just to see if I'm gonna make it, because this is awesome.
Oh my god, I was like in my seat, my eyes were wide. I was like, I can't move. And so when someone would like laugh or look at me, I'd be like, stop looking at me, stop touching me, stop doing anything around me that's me, taking me out of this movie.
Oh my god, speaking of which, I just have to say, I hear you. There was a guy who sat next to me in the screening and was like, and I don't even think he was press, they must have just like opened up the seats to other people, and like he talked a lot before the movie, which is okay. Like, I don't mind conversation before, but like at the beginning of the movie, after like an opening chase, he's like, that was a badass opening. I was like, please shut up, please don't talk to me, I don't talk to me, I'm watching this movie. Fortunately, he didn't do it. Like, he did it like one other time at the end, but like, I was afraid he was going to talk during the whole movie, and I was like, no, please don't do that, I will punch you. I don't want that.
Oh my god, yeah, I did not pay to hear your commentary during this movie, please shut up.
Yeah. Well, I didn't pay at all, but
I did.
I still. True. And I'm paying tonight to see it the second time. And I probably will like five more times.
All the times. There is no summer movie out there that I am now interested in, aside from maybe Tomorrowland. So May pretty much covered it for me until like September.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, I'm with you. Like, I mean, I'm excited for Trainwreck. Like, I'm excited for some comedies, but like, as far as the action movies, I'm kind of like, I'd rather watch this four more times than even watch Jurassic World once, or watch the Poltergeist remake once. Like, I don't care.
I'm actually really interested in the Poltergeist remake.
Oh, I'm not. I'm totally not interested.
I love Sam Rockwell.
I do too, and I love horror movies, but I'm just like, whatever. And it's PG-13, which I know the original is PG or PG-13.
It's PG.
But it's also PG in a time where it was like, that was it, PG.
Well,
or R.
It's PG in a time, like, where it would have been PG-13, so you can't really complain.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. I don't know. I just don't want to remake the movie. The original's fine. But anyway, do you have any other closing thoughts on Mad Max?
All except if you go to the Internet Movie Database page, you can see the skull of the helicopter guy. for Fury Road.
Okay,
it's like,
yeah,
right in
definitely
the
check,
big
check
advertisement.
That out.
Yeah, I just now noticed that.
So that is apparently Bruce Spence as the gyro captain from the original. Oh, holy crap! I'm on IMDb right now.
Yeah,
and I totally
see
it.
Right there,
right there in the corner, the left hand corner. Yeah. So if you're a big Mad Max enthusiast, you will know exactly that. And yeah, I don't really have much more to add than what I've already said. I think this movie is. You know, I try not to be super hyperbolic about things, but I just love this movie. It appealed to my inner child, my inner film geek, like everything as an adult. Like I loved it. I loved every second of it. You know, it's my favorite movie of the year so far. And you know, I'm not gonna count my chickens before they hatch, but if it gets knocked from that number one spot, I'm gonna be really, really shocked. To be honest.
Well, I mean, we have Tomorrowland and Poltergeist, but I think it will make more than Pitch Perfect 2 next weekend. That might be premature, but I think it might.
Yeah, I think word of mouth's really going to carry this movie, and it's the one people are going to be like, it's great, and they're like, okay, I must go see it then.
And then when they see it, they're going to be like, that wasn't that great, and then they're going to be like, well, you shouldn't have gone and seen it, you jerk.
Yeah, maybe you shouldn't have waited a weekend. Yeah. But I understand. So, yeah, I think with that will close our second episode of Unspooled Reel. So you can check out this podcast at gotchamovies.com and you on iTunes now, because Jenny got it up on there, so it is, you can listen to us on the go. We got a lot of good positive feedback from the last episode, so I was really excited to have that happen. So so keep leaving the feedback. If you are enjoying the show, let us know what we're doing right and what we can improve on. As always, you can check out everything, our news, reviews, podcasts, what have you, at gotchamovies.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at gotchamovies. Jenny, if you have anything you want to plug?
We accept nothing less than 5 stars now that we're on iTunes. Just kidding. But not really. We're like,
yeah,
Mad Max.
Please don't rate us. Please don't rate us a 1. You better rate us a 5, or we'll kill you.
We will hunt you down with a car that has a bunch of spikes on it, and you might as well be dead.
Yeah, we'll impale you with it. So, please don't rate us less than that.
No, you can also follow me and Ryan on Twitter. I am Jenny Lee, LEIGHX33, and Ryan is.
RyOllie90, RyOllie90.
Yeah.
And then a couple of things to plug on my end. I co-host another podcast called Over Under Movies with Octa A.K. Kozak and Eric McClanahan, both from writers on the playlist, where we pick one overrated movie and one underrated movie and discuss them. We have a new episode coming this week. It's a very Ben Wheatley heavy episode, so you can look forward to that. Also, the reason I've been mostly MIA from the film writing community is I have a job working on Hoarders Family Secrets, which is airing May 28th on Lifetime. So we've been working really hard on that, so please check that out when it airs.
Yeah, I mean, we all love Hoarders, so.
Yes, so check that out. I feel like there's one other thing I was going to say. Oh, look forward. We'll have another episode. Jenny is leaving the country this week, so it might be a little while until we have another episode, but we plan on reviewing Slow West, the Western starring Michael Fassbender that is coming out. Actually, is out on VOD right now, so we're going to review that. And we're going to review Maggie, the film, the Arnold Schwarzenegger zombie terminal disease film. So we're looking forward to doing that.
And that movie is also out on VOD.
Yes, also out on VOD. And maybe, just maybe beforehand, while Jenny is out of the country, we might have a bonus episode with our writer, with myself and our writer Taylor Dvorsky, to discuss Tomorrowland. So that might be coming, it might not be, but look out for that. We'll definitely be reviewing Slow West and Maggie. And do you have any other closing thoughts before we wrap this episode out?
Mad Max Fury Road is amazing for all genders.
Pretty much. It's a very gender-neutral blockbuster, which you don't see very often. So, please go see it. Please give it all your money. Not just money, but all your money.
Make sure your wallet is empty by the time you leave that theater.
Yeah. And you might as well, clip your credit cards when you're done, too. So, definitely check it out. And yeah, and be sure to check out our episode, or this episode when it drops, which you are, because it's the end of this episode. Duh. And apparently when we check out our next episode when it comes. So thank you, Jenny, for logging on and sort of playing hooky from work to record this.
Shh, don't tell anyone.
Okay, I won't tell anybody.